And now, Podtendo presents Side Quest Cinema.
Something happens to you when you leave this town. The farther away, the hazier it all gets. But me, I never left. I remember all of it.
Hey guys, welcome to Side Quest Cinema, where it's not a regular show. For some reason, we just talk about movies on this podcast feed for some reason. No one knows why.
No one knows.
Part of the mystery of it, though, you know? Part of the mystery. Nice. So, welcome back. It is scary, spooky month. Hopefully, you guys weren't too scared watching It Chapter 2. And I say you, I'm assuming you've seen it. If you haven't and you're picking this up, I realize it's not coming out like the weekend of or a couple weeks. It's been out for probably about a month now. So hopefully you've had a chance to go see it and you're not just randomly following along on our feed. And we spoil the movie for you because it's a good movie. You should go watch it.
Yeah, you should definitely go watch it. And I think that if you haven't watched it yet, just like go hit pause. Just go watch it or, you know, just quickly read that book. You know, it's a pretty short novel. Yeah. It's a short story.
The audiobook is only 37 hours, so that's like a work week.
Only 37 hours.
Yes.
And I mean, if you double time that in half, that's, you know, like 18 hours. You're good.
That's it.
You're good.
That's it. So, like we said off the top, we're reviewing a movie today. It's exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. We're looking at It Chapter 2. It was distributed by Warner Brothers. The runtime was 169 minutes. The budget was $60 to $70 million. Box office, we don't have exact numbers. We might be recording this fairly close to when the movie came out. But it is projected to get about $90 to $100 million opening weekend. And there's rumors that this might be the first horror movie that ever encapsulates $1 billion in the box office. It was directed by Andy Muschietti, produced by Barbara Muschietti, Dan Lin, and Roy Lee. The cast includes James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader, Isaac Mustafa, J. Ryan, and Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, pretty decent cast overall. And, you know, there's always an exception to every rule.
Yep.
Very happy with actually a lot of this. I kind of read the cast list and I was kind of underwhelmed. But after seeing it, I think that I was very pleasantly surprised. And this movie was everything I kind of wanted more, but I may be playing my hands a little bit too quickly, so.
Sweet. Yes, don't rush ahead too much. We have to get through, we have to put in the yard work. We got to eat the vegetables before we can get to the meat and potatoes, you know? So, we have to look at development details. So, there were hints that this film would be two parts, or two films, in February of 2016. Muschietti revealed that the plans to start production of this film, a film two, in July of 2017. So there was rumblings that it was going to be two parts, kind of before the first part came out. He stated, it's not just a sequel, it's two parts. It's very connected to the first one. They filmed in the same locations. Those are really boring development notes, you know?
It is what it is, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's a lot of retracing of the same steps. He was not the director for the first one.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, was he? Okay, good. So he was the guy that took over for Carrie. I'm blanking on the names, but.
Andy Muschietti and then your buddy Cary Fukunaga. Was scheduled to direct, but he and Andy came over and just kind of took over the project, so.
Yeah, I think so.
Nice. The problem also when you're making notes before you go see it, opening weekend, is there's not a lot of details revealed because they don't want to play their hand too much and people don't want to dive into the nitty gritty. They want to experience the movie before they start looking at those things. So that is the one thing that's kind of a detriment, I guess, to this podcast, especially since it's not coming out right the opening weekend. Maybe it's like a month later, but meh. So what happens? So we like to start, or we like to rule the movie. So again, spoilers. This is our Podtendo patented terrible plot summary, which is fine if it's an old movie that you've seen a bunch of times. But if you haven't seen this movie, I implore you, please go watch. We're not going to do a spoiler-free review. We've expected you watch it. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you really ready? All right, so 27 years later, after a hate crime, Mike contacts all the loser clubs and tell them, it's back. Everyone has forgotten about it, but returns anyways, except Stan. And their memories quickly return. They all go on quests to find tokens, regroup, and battle it one last time.
Yeah, man, it's kind of like they took the exact same structure from the first one and then they wrapped it into one. Like, I was reading a lot of people talking about this movie and saying, oh, it feels long, it's so long. And then I watched it and I was like, holy crap, we're already at the finale.
Yeah.
Actually, the funny thing is, so backstory behind me watching this was, so me and Hope, we were big fans of the first one. And we decided, since we kind of canceled our date to go to BC to kind of make up for it, we came home and we watched the first one.
Okay, nice.
And then we, you know, dovetailed it into watching this one. And it was really nice. So we kind of like were very fresh on the material. And there was a lot of like, well, I wish they did this and I wish they did that. And then literally going and seeing this and being like, wow, they really fixed a lot of the issues I had. So
yeah. Yeah, no, it was good. Myself, we watched it a couple days before, maybe one or two days. I made sure to listen to our first podcast, so I kind of knew what my thoughts were, because sometimes I forget how I feel about a movie, but it's nice to have an audio recording. We went opening night, and we went for like a VIP experience. We showed up at the theater. They brought us food. We had a jug of beer that we split, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Kind of a cool experience. You feel like you're in a really fancy airplane.
Me and Hope also went for the VIP experience.
Okay.
It was kind of the first time we actually did that.
Yeah.
And it's so nice, like, we showed up early, so we actually had a few drinks at the bar. They always get me because, you know, if they have a martini that is somewhat similar to a James Bond martini,
if they call it the 007, you buy it.
I buy it, yes. I am that a-hole. So yeah, it was good. And then Hope had a couple like slushy drinks and it was nice, and we were looking, and we should have because I guess on Wednesdays they have like, it's of course $69 for two tickets to VIP, two entrees, an appetizer and dessert, and then just drinks are extra. And you're like, that's actually not a terrible thing to do on a Wednesday.
Nice. I thought you said you went on a Wednesday, and I was like, wow, you must be fancy, because you went before it debuted in theaters. Good for you. But clearly you didn't. All right. So back to our review. Now that we've kind of set up how we watched it, so we can recall in the future when we, or in the future when we listen to this past episode, we're like, oh yeah, I remember that. We look at storytelling. So the introduction is the first part up until the hate crime. The inciting incident is the Gain returning and the fetch quests. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think the gang returning is the inciting incident, so it's returned. The fetch quest is the rising action. The climax is the scene in the sewer, and the conclusion is the scene in the quarry. And then kind of just a little follow-up with what's everyone's life up to now.
Yes, I think so. And kind of like with the, I guess it would be what, prologue opens with the hate crime, and the epilogue ends with Stan's letter.
Yep, yeah, spoiler. Pretty much. Nice. So we look at the film's major overarching theme. So we have fear, loss of innocence, and returning to the past.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting a reflection on the first movie.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the horrors that we are watching are kind of like related. Obviously, like each horror that Pennywise presents the kid with in the first one, he's really semi-related to them, or symbolic to them. So going back to this one, it's kind of like the horrors that are relating to them is a fear that they had in the past that they've either tried to hide or just not want, or just didn't want to face. So it's interesting.
Yeah, very true.
Kind of the mirror and how they did that. So I'm very like when you said that the director said that these are intended to be two movies combined, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Nice. So with that, this starts, now we've kind of done all the legwork, we can get into the meat and potatoes of this fine meal and get into our review of this film. So we start out by, what is our favorite part of the movie? So Tyson, what is your favorite part of It Chapter 2?
To be honest, I really kind of like the directing and okay. like the way they took a lot of the characters, mostly because I didn't know what to truly expect. I knew the story and how they were going to play it out, but yeah. I didn't know how these characters were going to get there.
Yeah.
And the way they took these characters was really interesting. It was rewarding, and it felt like each character developed and had a story to tell. And even those people that, even some of the characters that you feel kind of get cheated, like Stan, you end up walking away kind of feeling like they, like it makes sense, and I like their story.
Yeah.
And it works because of it. Like, and you could go through each character and like list it out. I don't think I have to. I think it's kind of more intriguing if you just kind of like do it yourself.
Yeah.
And just think about each character and how they grow. And how the only character that doesn't grow is there, or one of the, I shouldn't say only character that dies, one of the characters that die and is one of the characters that doesn't grow, and it's the villain. So it's very intriguing.
Nice. For myself, I love the casting. I love the casting of James Ransom as an older Jack Dylan Gracer. So that is Eddie, because it literally looks like Eddie grown up. That is the most perfect casting I've ever seen in my entire life. His mannerisms, Ransom's act, like he does everything. Like at the point where he gets stabbed in the cheek by Henry Bauer, and he kind of like shuffles into the shower. I was having so much fun at that part. I didn't even care that my favorite character was in danger at that point, right? He brought so much energy, so much charm. And I guess just I'm gonna give a shout out to Bill Hader too. That guy is amazing. He's done great work on, if you haven't watched Barry, I recommend checking it out, because that is an excellent little film. Really shows off his breadth of acting. He's not just a one hit wonder kind of SNL guy. And those two together, their kind of chemistry, the fact they get to interact, I think those are probably my favorite parts of the movie.
I cannot agree more. They were the very strong support characters in the first one, but it was very like Bill and like Bev and almost Ben's kind of story. Whereas part two seems to be a little bit more Richie, Eddie, and even Mike for that point.
Hey, Mike got something to do. Cool.
Yeah, and even Stan.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was kind of like, you know, part one, part two, really hand in hand. And man, Bill Hader, I walked out of this movie with hope. And like she said it, and I just completely agreed. It's like, man, who fucking knew Bill Hader could act? And it's like, yeah, no shit. Like,
yeah.
It was so good. He and she actually was like let's watch some more things that he's in. Like he's so good.
Yeah.
And
I said Barry, if you haven't seen Barry, give it a chance, watch it, because you'll be like, that was a kick-ass little show.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely need to give that a check out, man. And the guy that plays Eddie, I'm sorry, what was his name again?
It's James Ransom.
James Ransom. The way he changed, like he spoke, was perfect. Just
same ticks, wonderful. Same aneurysms. Ticks. Yeah.
So good.
Literally, it looked like they just took Jack Dylan Gracer from the first movie and aged him like 27 years.
Yeah, so good.
He's also one of my favorite characters in maybe one of my favorite horror movies, Sinister. That's what it is.
Oh, yes.
He's the smartest character in Sinister. Unfortunately, he becomes dumb in the second one and becomes the main character, so that's a downside. But acting chops on that guy are great. And I think, that's it. But like Tyson said, we could go through each character and talk nothing but good things about each of them, right?
Yeah. And actually, a small shout out. He was actually in Generation Kill, and I just remember this. Like, I remember, like, I haven't seen that show in years, but he's fantastic in it. Like, I remember like all his scenes, like specifically. Now that I've put the face to that show, it's like, oh man,
okay,
that makes so much sense. Really, really cool little show. If you ever want to check it out, so.
Nice. Okay, so what about what is our most notable scene or part of this movie? So which part are you going to think about the most? Maybe when you talk to someone and you say, hey, you know, in like 6 months' time, and say, hey, have you seen It Chapter Two? And they say, oh man, that scene, that is crazy, or I like that part, or this was cool. What is your most notable scene or part of this movie, Tyson?
I don't know. I kind of just think the way that they handled it, it's tough to pick like a scene.
Yep.
Because like I don't really have like a favorite. I kind of have like more of a, like I just love Richie's story in this, and like it is such a beautiful, like kind of like the R plus E at the end was just like, oh, so heartwarming. I even like, I had to like point it out to Hope because she kind of like just like wasn't, she was like, it, she must have blinked and like had it like not sink in. But I was like, yeah, no, it's, and I don't want to spoil it too much, but the R plus E thing was just like, man, my that gave me the feels for sure.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you really liked that part. Yeah, I mean, if you're like, if Bill Hader, if you were to give him like what's his best moment, I think just the part where they're in the quarry afterwards and they're all kind of making little jokes and kind of just like taking that gasp after this like traumatic experience, and then just him breaking down crying, right? Like if you were to say that's the one scene, you're like that one, you're like, oh my god, Bill Hader, great.
Yeah. Oh man, he straight up stole the show during it. Like,
yeah,
I kind of laughed when, you know, he gets introduced by, oh, Mike calls and he immediately pukes, and that's his like his tick that he's developed.
Yeah,
is now he just like cannot stomach his guts.
Yeah,
and just like the point where he's getting attacked by the what the heck is he getting attacked by, the mummy, and James McAvoy is trying to hold him off, or no, it was the spider head or whatever.
Oh yeah,
and then Ben has to run in and save the day. Just like that whole scene right there is just like, that's such a important, impactful scene, and like I really, there's a lot of depth to this movie, and yeah, it's worth its rewatchings, and there's just like little scenes that just like makes you want to rewatch the movie. So
yeah, so my most notable scene personally is the opening. So it showed off just the horrors of Derry that weren't Pennywise. So the first one made you kind of believe that Derry was, outside of maybe like Henry Bower, was a fine place to live. But this kind of opening scene where this group of locals beats up and attacks these two gay men, it's pretty horrific. It's hard to watch, right? Like, I don't think a lot of people were sitting there being like, oh, this is fun, like what the fuck, like this is really dark. It's deep, it's serious, and then it's just like the fact they made it hard to watch is cool. And as one of the characters who's been beat the fuck is then thrown in the river, as he's gasping fair, all of a sudden he looks up and he sees, oh look, I'm gonna be saved. And it's probably the best use of Pennywise in either movie, just this creepy clown with glowing eyes standing on the riverbanks, reaching out his hand as like a form of please, here, I'm here to help you. I think that's such an effective scene, just from showing you, like showing, not telling, right? And that's what movies are. They shouldn't be having to tell you everything. They should be able to show you stuff. And that's, I think, kind of shows you how dark and like this problem is, right? Pennywise is a plague on the whole town, and this is how bad the town is, right? So I think that's probably my most notable scene.
Yeah. And I think that another like just dark scene is the under the bleachers scene where he's holding the little like firefly. So like he plays a very like, that's how he should have been played the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's Bill Skarsgård's best scene in the movie. Yeah. But I think the best use of Pennywise is the hate crime scene. If that makes sense. Right? Because it could just be anyone, right? It's just that scene where he's kind of drowning and you look up and you see Pennywise and you're like, oh, that poor man, he is so fucked. Fuck, this sucks, right?
Yeah.
Versus his interaction with the little girl, you're right, is probably Bill Skarsgård's best performance. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those like dark moments of this movie where part one was funny with its dark, like dark atmosphere a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie is a dark movie and it has funny moments.
Yeah. Very, very true.
So I think it's a very like yin yang kind of thing where they've almost like there's a ratio to comedy to horror, and they've just like flipped them. So
yeah,
it's very good. I think that it's a lot more grotesque, and there's a lot more it seems to be that there's been a resurgence of like body horror ever since I don't know if like obviously Stranger Things and this were in production at the same time, but there seems to be a huge resurgence in body horror now coming back into the mainstream. And as someone that like loves Reanimator, I'm more than happy to see all these movies kind of get another chance at light, because movies like It showcased how truly like horrific and grotesque practical effects mixed with CGI handedly can be really effective. Going too hardcore with CGI is a hampering, but yeah, mixing in the practical effects can make it very horrific.
Very, very true. Nice. So then let's move on to a little bit of a negative part. What is your least favorite part of this movie?
I'm Gonna let you go first on this one.
All right, I'm gonna say the clubhouse visit. When the kids first get together in Derry, they make a trek to the clubhouse, which apparently they all hung out at enough to have little like in jokes, and they had to joke about the shower caps so the spiders wouldn't get in their hair. Why wasn't it in the first movie? You know, there was bad CGI de-aging of all the kids as well. So, you know, you want this scene in the next movie. You've got the kids around from the first movie. Why not just film this scene? Right. Other than the fact that you needed to give Ben something to do other than just be like pawning after Beverly in this film, because really Ben does nothing. Jay Ryan, great. He's an attractive man. He has almost nothing. Like, right. Like, he's just kind of there. Doesn't really add anything. And I think they literally just made that scene so that he could be like buried alive for that Bev Ben climax at the end of the movie. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, why wouldn't they have the foresight to do this before? So I think that's probably my least favorite part of the movie, is just they started shoehorning in things from the first one, but they knew they were making a second one anyways, right? So why didn't they be more progressive?
Yeah, they could have benefited from doing the Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings treatment and just film them in tandem.
Yeah.
See, my only, like, I like the Ben story. Because unfortunately in the Ben book, or in the books, like, Ben's story is garbage, and he gets a very lackluster-y story and kind of just gets left as the third wheel, saves the day, left as the third wheel, and then just, like, doesn't even get, like, him and Bev aren't really even a thing in the end of it. Man, this makes no sense. At least that's how I'm remembering how the book ends. But, and in this, when Ben and Beverly actually end up together, it makes more sense than when, like, her and Bill ended up together. Because it's, like, yeah. If, like, to me, like, but again, like, me and Hope had this conversation, and Hope wanted her to end up with Bill. And to me, that never really made sense. It felt like Bill loved her, but wasn't, like, madly in love with her. And I got that feeling that, like, Ben was truly head over heels in love with this girl, connected on such a deep emotional level. Like, yeah, the lame jokes. So was it back to Boys to Men? All the, like,
New Kids
all
on those the Block.
New Kid, whatever. New Kids on the Block. All those jokes, kind of like the first one. Some people were like, oh, how they're just there for a joke. And you're like, no, they're kind of there to develop those two's relationship and actually connect these characters and show that, like, she kind of has the same likes for him, and she sees him for who he really is and, like, likes him for that. She may not, like, love him for that, and maybe, like, it's a little shallow of her to kind of, like, see him as his handsome self and then immediately, like, oh yeah, let me hook up with him.
Yes,
but,
yes.
But Beverly, she doesn't.
Beverly being into the most handsome boy in the Losers Club, and then when they grow up, being attractive to the most handsome boy. She's a real deep character, that one, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's a little not the case, because Ben is the most handsome guy when she gets older. When they first meet up, she's kind of like, oh hey Ben, and just, like, doesn't really think too much into it. And then she, like,
well, it's because she's married, she has another life, she doesn't remember.
No, exactly. But I'm
like, Bill, like, he's married.
Yes, but as soon as she sees Bill, she's kind of like, they have a connection and they start kind of like getting close again. But I feel like then once she kind of like looks deeper in herself, she kind of like sees how much Ben actually truly cares for her, and then she realizes and she reflects, and like that's that whole scene of all these people, these abusive people that have tried to take so much from her, and the one person that has only given her stuff and never once pushed that envelope, she's just like never given that second chance. So I feel like she's like put up that wall immediately, like because Ben's so the reverse of every person that she's been trying to, like, that have been trying to put her in this little box. Ben let her just be free. And I think that's a big scene. Like, the whole, like, it's not handled the best way. And I think that's my criticism, is this. I feel like they should have taken they should have done what you said and actually melted these two movies together instead of doing it piecemeal, part one and then part two. It's like there's a beat in between those two where they should have just linked these two up and just wrote the whole movie out into like two movies and got it greenlit. I think that's the best way of handling it. you've been able to like not CGI all the bloody kids and actually being able to like actually interject important points like the club host into the first one, instead of being like, oh yeah, no, you just don't remember that because you've lost chapters in your memory. It's like, okay, we get that you want to include the kids because they're a very popular part of the first movie. It kind of like they wanted to see what was popular in the first one and then react a little bit and then fix the second part. And I get that that's a different way of doing it, but I feel like sometimes you need to just have the integrity and the backbone to just be like, no, we need to make this one solid through line as opposed to like hearing what the people want and then reacting. But that's such a 2019 thing to do, so.
Nice. So what's your least favorite part of the movie?
I guess I'm echoing your part. I think that had they just done these movies all in one,
so the least favorite part is like a part of the actual movie. I think you kind of gave more of a criticism, so I'll count that as your criticism. You don't have a least favorite part.
I'm just gonna say Bill Skarsgård.
Like, yes. Why would you say Bill Skarsgård? Of course, why would you say that? Come on.
I'm always gonna say that because I'm trying to think of something that's not so that bad. That's the most obvious answer. Like, he's the worst part of this movie.
Yeah. Well, it is funny that they almost seemed like they limited his role in this film because they realized he was so shitty in the first one.
Yes. Right?
And he was, like, I almost feel like they were like, what if we made it more of a sci-fi movie and got rid of the horror elements a little bit because Bill Skarsgård obviously can't hold his chops to, like, kid actors. Kid actors stole the show, and now that we have, like, good actors coming in, like a James McAvoy and a Bill Hader, that guy's gonna be blown out of the water. So he was just kind of like, he did nothing.
Yeah. Right? Well, I think he had the handful of scenes. Like, he had Under the Bleachers.
Yep. Great.
Not bad.
Yeah.
He had the one where he's putting on his makeup while it's him just by himself while drooling looking at Beverly.
Yeah. Almost good. Like, if that was the design of the character where he's got, like, scratch marks on his eyes, that's almost scarier than the balloon-headed guy. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and you want to, you can do it. I saw, like, you know, there's certain scenes where he's not actually CGI'd in the first one. You can kind of see it's just like this haggard, messed up looking clown. And you're like, man, had they just got him like running around looking haggard, all messed up, like he might have been able to do something there. But I feel like they just felt the need to always have to CGI him and always have to just meddle with him. Yeah. So I don't know if it's like necessarily 100% his fault or if it's just he wasn't scary enough or his performance wasn't enough that they felt the need to enhance it CGI. Like, I don't know. I don't know where that line was. I wasn't on set. But it's also like there's something there, and it's not the strongest part of the movie. You're not scared of it in this one.
No.
As the way you are in the first one. So
very, very true. So my criticism is the CGI. It wasn't really scary, and in the first part, it doesn't hold up very well. It looks stupid. The scene where he crawls out of the projector, and he's like, or he just, like, runs across the screen and his head's shaking. That's not scary. It's a jump scare. It works once. Once you're aware of it, it loses all merit. Upon rewatching those films, I almost skip through the scary parts, the parts where Bill Skarsgård's on, and watch the interactions between the kids, because I think there's actual chemistry. There's like there's a reason for me to devote my time again to watch those moments. I never do that with Bill Skarsgård. The CGI in this movie is laughable. At no point was it scary. The scene where they're in the apartment and there's like Mrs. what was her name, Herder or something like that, you know, when she's like creepily smiling and shutting the door, that's scary. When she's watching her down the hallway and then like twitches off, that's scary. When she goes into the kitchen, you're genuinely scared until a big stupid CGI grandma thing comes out and like runs around and you're like, that's not scary. That's stupid.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good. It won't look good in a year when you go back to rewatch this. It loses replayability. It's just one of those things where like, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But
and the big climax with him running around being all goofy and everything. Yeah. Yeah, the CGI is the weakest parts and the characters are the strongest.
Oh, 100%. And it's almost weird that they changed from, I don't know if you could count jump scares, but I'm sure if you count jump scares, you know, our criticisms in the last film where it was like quiet moments, then boom, and the sound design, and you're like, oh my God, that's so annoying. The sound design in this movie was much better. When they're sitting around having dinner, there's like just random like sounds and you're like, am I hearing things? Like, what? There's a weird buildup of tension. And all of a sudden, this baby crab comes out of the freaking fortune cookie. And you're like, well, that's not scary. That's stupid. So for some reason, they toned back the scary and they like turned up the sci-fi quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's a different genre. So to say that this movie, if it does break $1 billion, is the first horror movie, I don't think it's a horror movie. I think it's a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, it's like, it's a body horror, right? Like, it's more of like, oh, look how gross this is. Look at this wing that's flying around.
Exactly.
Isn't
I
that
think
gross?
It's like a...
Here's a naked old lady. Isn't that gross?
A fly or, you know, like Alien or Aliens where they're sci-fi horror, right? And you're like, oh, it's still a horror movie. But you're like, kind of, sort of, but not really. So...
No, most definitely. I 100% agree. 100% agree. And I think that it's very much... a reaction to how like horror movies kind of sit, and I because gently like when the first It movie came out, it was very like that was right around the tail end of Sinister 2 and those kind of movies where it was lots of jump scares and lots of big loud noises and dark rooms and things jumping out at you. So that's why it was scary when It jumped up, shaked his head, and waggled his hands and ran across the room at you. Because he did it fast and it was dark and shady.
But it loses so much in replayability, right? So that there's no point in just kind of give up, right?
For sure. And I think that's unfortunately part of horror movies. And one thing about horror movies that I think does stand up well is the psychological part and the... Not necessarily body horror part, but the part that makes your
rewatch
skin crawl.
The Mrs. Hader part, right? The smile, the anticipation of what's going to happen. And when she goes into the kitchen the second time and she starts like kind of like taking her shirt off and you see her naked, you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? That is so much scarier than anything they could produce. And the fact that they went for this big, stupid looking monster thing, and I'm like, it's not scary. Or like Paul Bunyan, that wasn't scary.
Eyes are doofy, that are always staring out like it's like they're gone for different sides of the world.
Anyways, so like that's probably my criticism. But let's stop being a little bit negative because I don't think we have too much to say, just so we don't kind of retread the same ground, and end with a final praise of this film, and then we're done our review.
So my final praise is I think that a lot of my issues from the first one tended to get addressed, even though I didn't really have a lot of them. I think that the strongest part of these movies is the characters' interactions and the characters' stories, and I think that everyone kind of got a fair shake at them. And there's a lot to kind of, for someone like me to sit down and be like, well, this person was this story and that's kind of how they grew. I think that there's enough material there that I can do that for every single character, and upon rewatching, I can just kind of like, you know, watch the scary parts and just kind of react to, well, who's interacting with who right now? And just like think more on that level, like, oh, well, so-and-so is in the room with this person, and what does that mean for their relationships? And if this person's in the room with this person, what does that mean for their relationship? When Bill Hader and James Ransom, when they both run off and they have the whole like, not scary at all, he's fucking with us, and like go to that door first, and then it's the little
So one of the things I've listened to a review, I've seen a couple ones. No one has talked about this yet. We found the legs, because when that happened to them in the house the first time, and they go to the not scary, and it's just the lady hanging in the closet, and like, oh my God, where the fuck are the legs?
Yeah.
They were in the other room.
Yeah.
But again, and the anticipation of the horror of what's going to be in that room are scary. And then you hear the tiptoeing and then all of a sudden these legs run up and you're like, that's not real. That's stupid. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And it's not like threatening. It's legs doing some tippy tapping. Like you could literally just run up and give it a boot.
Yeah. Anyways,
but when the Pomeranian transforms into Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
You're just like, that's not really scary. That's just like bad shock CGI.
Yes.
And you're like...
And calling it Five Nights at Freddy's is perfect because literally that's what it is. It's a jump scare, right?
Yep.
But my final praise is the casting is top-notch. They have great direction. Callbacks are really funny, right? There was that Kiss Me Fat Boy scene in the locker. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cute. You know, a little Tim Curry in there. The amazing risk they took at actually telling the story of It. So they kind of took it more of a sci-fi, did this weird Native American religious kind of mystic elements to it. I thought it was really cool, and I love that part of it, versus the first one, which they went for like weird jump scary, right? And it's almost one of those ones where you're like, after seeing the second one is so good, I wish they would have like remade the first one to mirror the tone better and the themes of sci-fi rather than just making it a jump scare mess.
Totally.
Right?
And I feel like if these people kind of like, if they, like, you know, everything needs to be a universe, if they were to make another Stephen King world, I think that they've hit the right tone with the second part. And to see the Stephen King scenes were so funny. Like, I laughed out loud. Like,
yeah.
The guy, the writer that, like, he has to rip off the, well, you're a successful writer, $300. Yep. It's just like, man, you know how many times he had to deal with that? Like, yep. Oh, I'll just like go to this small town and buy things. Like, oh wait, you're Stephen King. Yeah, yeah, that, well, thing you want that I would regularly charge like $10 for, I'm gonna charge you 10 times as much.
Well, in most of Stephen King's stories, there is a writer who's very successful and handsome, always gets the girl. So it's him. So they keep harping on how the endings of his stories kind of suck, and you start feeling bad, and then all of a sudden Stephen King shows up, and then he makes the joke, and then you're like, oh, okay, so it's okay. So he acknowledges, too, that his endings kind of suck. Cool.
Yeah. And I also kind of like how... So the ending of this, I actually like. I think it's quite good, and they handle it really well.
Yeah.
And, like, the resolution of the climax has layers, and I think it is very good. And it has just parts of... like bright parts and heartbreaking parts, but I think all in all it's very rewarding, and I think it was a good resolution for all the jokes about a bad ending. I like the ending.
Yeah, very, very true. That is a good point. All right, cool. So with that ends kind of our review of this. Obviously, we both enjoy it. Probably one of those things we'll go back to. Kind of weird, though, that I might rewatch this part over the first part, given the chance, right? Or one of those things where I might do a super cut where I watch both films. It's about 5 hours and cut out like an hour and a half, you know, and just cut out stupid jump scenes or stuff I don't like and just kind of skip through. And I might watch the movie kind of like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's like, so a thing I sometimes do when I'm watching James Bond movies is like, I know a lot of the like set dressing scenes, unless it's like a lot of scenes I like, you basically can skip forward them until like it's kind of like an actual important scene. So, and if you do that, you can basically cut them all down to like an hour and a half. They're pretty, there's a lot of filler in those movies. And I feel like if you just did that for some of the, you know, schlocky horror scenes or skip past the ones you don't really like and watched everything else and then watch the horror scenes you do like, I think that you're in for a great experience.
Nice. So, Babe Hall of Fame, let's revisit it. Jessica Chastain, does she qualify for our Babe Hall of Fame? Did she do enough in this film? Did she titillate you and make you say, all right, you're in?
Jessica Chastain. See, I didn't know what to expect out of her, and I thought that she did really good, so I give her a thumbs up.
Huh, weird. Weird how, like, just we are so different on the women that we like. Jessica Chastain, when they were talking about casting the second part, her name was brought up immediately. We were like, oh, Jessica Chastain. I never fucking heard of her. I looked at her. Yeah, she's an attractive lady. Yes, again, objectively, she is beautiful. She deserves to be in a Hall of Fame. Did she do anything in this film, though, that made me say, wow, what a great person? No, she went for the really handsome-looking guy. Like, I'll put Jay Ryan in our Babe Hall of Fame, because that guy is a stud over Jessica Chastain. But I'm like, I don't think I can give her a vote, because I'm like, really, you went for the most attractive little boy, and now when you're older, you went for the most attractive guy? I was like, eh, you're kind of shallow. Your character arc was technically over in the last film, so I don't think you get it for this one, you know?
That's so funny. We are so different.
Yep. So oh, different.
Well. All right. Well, I guess that's a pass.
All right. How about a final, are you buying it? And then we'll get into our kind of pop culture-y kind of look back on the second half of the show. And then we're almost done. So, are you buying it? They listened to the first part of our podcast. So they decreased the horror jump scares. They decreased the CGI. They decreased Bill Skarsgård. They gave the minority characters, like Mike and Bev, something to actually do, so they weren't just damsels in distress, or the black guy sitting there. They had a homosexual character that actually got to succeed, and they didn't just kill off. So did they listen to our podcast and make changes based on it?
You know, I'd like to say yes, but I feel like Disney didn't listen, but maybe DC will. So, right. You know what? Maybe they do. Maybe they do. Maybe I haven't looked at our analytics, and I don't know how many people are in California, so that would be the telltale sign.
Well, I just imagine one executive listen, and he's like, guys, this like one podcast is saying we should do these things. Let's make these changes. And they say, okay.
Sounds like they know what they're talking about. They talked an hour and a half. That's more than I want to do on it. So let's go with their opinions.
Nice. Okay, so that ends our review of the show. Like you said, generally positive. We had a really good time. Tyson loved it. At one point, he was talking about the love story for 5 minutes, and I just was maybe watching a football game.
And there's multiple love stories. That's like it's a character-driven story. You know how many times I get a character-driven story? Like,
it's true.
Like, very little these days. Most of the time, like, explosions, blah, blah, blah.
He's still talking about it. Loves it. Nice. So with that, we're going to end with our Wayback Machine. We've got a cultural significance, and then we'll wrap up, and we will get out of here. So we're going to travel back a whole month ago. Are you ready? To September 6, 2019. And I'm going to ask Tyson, what is your favorite show? Could it be The Simpsons? Season 30, episode 23. Crystal Blue-haired persuasion. Mr. Burns stops the plant healthcare plan, so Marge gets Bart crystals to help with his ADHD. Hilarity ensues. Or DuckTales, season 2, episode 20. The golden armory of Cornelius Coot. Webby convinces the boys to go on an adventure to find the missing treasure of Cornelius Coot. So Tyson, of those two shows, if you could travel back a whole month, which would you rather watch?
So I could go on an adventure to find treasure.
Yep.
With potentially gold.
Yep.
And I can enrich my life.
Yep.
And hang out with some pretty awesome, hilarious ducks that actually know comedy.
Yep.
Or I could get trippy with some crystals in The Simpsons.
Yep.
I think I'm going to go DuckTales.
Nice. Good job, DuckTales. Life is like a hurricane here in Duckburg. Race cars, lasers, aeroplanes. It's a Duckburg. Might solve the mystery. Cool. A new theme song.
Yeah, very new theme song. Yeah. I guess that's from the new series.
That's it. So good job, DuckTales. We have to say DuckTales at the end. How exciting. So other top TV shows you could have been watching are The Act, Barry, Better Things, Catastrophe, Chernobyl, The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, Fleabag, and or Euphoria.
Yeah, so, you know, it's some stuff. You got a mixed bag. You got some movies and some TV shows that are good. And September's it's all right. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's the start. So we'll give it another month or so. Let it warm up.
How about top cartoons? We could watch Green Eggs and Ham, Harley Quinn, Infinity Train, and 101 Dalmatian Street.
I've not heard of any of these.
All right. How about top movies? So nothing else came out the week that It Chapter 2 came out. Still in theaters, you could watch Angel Has Fallen, Ready or Not, 47 Meters Down, Uncaged, Good Boys, and Extreme Crisis. Okay, and if you waited a week or two, you could see Downton Abbey and Rambo, Last Blood.
Yeah, I guess nobody really wanted to step to the It challenge, eh?
Nope, that was kind of one of those things where, like, you take this box office. It's... Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Yeah, you guys take this one.
Maybe coming out, or maybe we know more when this podcast is released, but on the little website where I find, which movies come out, it shows kind of box office. It's called The Numbers. It's a good little website. Check it out sometime if you're ever like, I wonder what movies are interesting right now. I did see, for some reason, coming out in October, Are You Afraid of the Dark, the movie? But it also might be a TV series, so...
Either way, I'm in. When does it start? When can we start doing podcasts on the show? Let's change it to Are You Afraid of the Dark Podtendo, or Podtendoing in the Dark.
Oh, there you go. Tyson did it. There, naming conventions 101 done by Tyson. How about top video games that came out September 6, 2019? We have Spyro Reignited Trilogy, NBA 2K20, NHL 20, Borderlands 3, Link's Awakening, Mario Kart Tour, FIFA 20, and Nintendo released its Super Nintendo Entertainment System Online as part of the Switch Online account. So, been pretty exciting times, you know?
Yeah, video games are killing it right now. It's very difficult to keep up.
Nintendo, they made a lot of money on the Wii, and everyone's like, it's a gimmick. And then they really sucked on the Wii U, but, like, the Switch has just been so damn good. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and it's only getting better. It's kind of crazy. It's like they're actually listening to people, and they're like, you know what? Let's just give them what they want. And instead of, like, charging them, like, an arm and a leg, being like, hey, you know, instead of having to buy all those Mario games you love, why don't you just, like, set up a subscription service that gives you online, you're going to pay online anyways, like you do for your regular consoles, but why don't you get, like,
and
your
then we can make
favorite
our
games
online better, and instead of just putting money into, like, licensing fees, we can, like, individual licensing fee, we can just group them together and make one giant account and give you better online services.
Yeah, and, like, what happens if we were to give you, like, a bundle if you have multiple accounts? Or, you know, what if you were going to, like, let's say you wanted to play games that you actually enjoyed as opposed to just getting some free junk that some marketing agent that has a relationship with a couple of game developers that thinks it's a good idea.
Plus, PlayStation Plus gave me Arkham Knight. I mean, I have a physical copy of it, so why wouldn't I download it and play it, you know?
Yeah, or how about that one indie game that Xbox Live gave me last month that I've never looked at or played or will never play or even install on my hard drive? Or how about the 100 of games that I have on my Xbox Live account that I have not installed or played? How about that? How about if you gave me access to games I actually did want to play, like some of your retro classics?
Yep.
And you had a library of access to these games. Maybe you're online, you know, maybe it's pretty good. Maybe it's not bad.
Good job, Nintendo. And then finally, let's look at the top three songs according to the Billboard charts from September 6, 2019. So the number three song is I Don't Care by Ed Sheeran. When I'm with my baby, yeah, all the bad things disappear. You're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah. Stupid, I don't care. Well, there you go.
We had an Ed Sheeran reference.
Yep. Tyson's favorite guy ever, Ed Sheeran. What about the number two song? Is Truth Hurts by Lizzo? I'm in gray till they gotta be gray. Don't text me, tell it straight to my face. Best friend, set me down in the salon chair. Shampoo press, get you out of my hair. Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. Nice, a Minnesota Vikings reference. I like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, also a melody and sample that clearly got ripped off from 15 other songs. So, good job.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I was like, I kind of like this song.
Yeah, because you've heard it 16 other times in better versions. My gosh, like that is a blatant ripoff of you just writing your own lyrics to, literally the melody and beat to another song.
There you go. Suck it, Lizzo. And the number one song is Señorita by Shawn Mendes. Spanish song, so sweet. Hey, that should be the next lyric. I should write for Shawn Mendes. Shawn, hook me up.
Yeah, man. We'll take a fraction of your writer's paychecks. Just, like, hire us. We'll do a better job. And I actually know lots of other songs you can sample, and no one else would going to call you out. Just trust me, man. I know these things.
Nice. So then finally, we'll end with our cultural significance. So in this section, we look at interesting stories, marketing tactics, or landmark occasions. We share some examples, tell how this film relates, and tie it all back together in the end. Oh, wait, did we want to go back in time at that time machine? No. You know what? I remember a month ago. It was all right, but I had to redo my roof, so I wasn't very happy about it.
Yeah, and I still got to study, so.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to say 9 to that one. So we'll end with, again, cultural significance. So in this one, let's look at movies that set up sequels that never happened, okay? So in 1993, we saw Super Mario Brothers. We had a war teased at the end, and we will never see the conclusion to that story.
A true tragedy.
How about in 1998, Godzilla? What happened to the lone Godzilla egg in MSG at the end of that movie?
I guess he's got a job paper out, maybe, or maybe driving an Uber.
Okay, what about in 2007, The Golden Compass? Let's make a movie from a book series, and we'll never go past the first part, but we'll definitely hint that we're going to make another part of that movie. Yeah, that sounds fun.
It's not a bad thing. You know what we should do? We should definitely hire an up-and-coming actor that's going to sign on to a gig that's going to take him away for very many years, and let's bomb at the box office so it's not financially feasible to make more of them.
Cool. What if in 2008 with Incredible Hulk, all of Banner's character development and questions were kind of unanswered, or kind of answered but not really? I mean, technically the Hulk will never get his own standalone sequel in the MCU, so
yeah, he kind of got shortchanged on that one. Thanks, Edward Norton.
Thanks, Edward Norton, indeed. How about in 2011, Green Lantern? I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that one.
Enough said? Okay, all right. Yep. And what about 2014? Amazing Spider-Man 2. Poor Andrew Garfield. All he has is his fame, his good looks, and his millions of dollars.
And that cursed talent.
Yeah. So I feel bad.
Hopefully his life's looking up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe with Spider-Man not being in the MCU anymore, maybe they'll just go back and give the reins to Garfield and he can make a Spider-Man 3.
Oh, God, how funny would that be?
How fucky would that be?
That'd be so funny. Like, seriously, could you imagine? And how funny is it that Tom Holland didn't get 2, Andrew Garfield didn't get 2, but yet we got Spider-Man 3 from Tobey Maguire, the one where he... the one where he turns emo and does a jazz walk.
Yeah, all right. How about films that were supposed to be sequels to other movies? All right, so that's our final. Got three more movies to get through. So in 1987, Predator came out. But did you know that originally the screenwriters thought about, hey, Rocky beat Drago from Russia. What if an alien came from space and fought Rocky? And that is where they started writing a script for. And that movie became Predator.
Oh my goodness. And yep. Then Arnold starred in it.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. What about in 1997? Speed 2, Cruise Control. What if John McClane was on a cruise ship and had to stop terrorists? And then they were like, let's not make this a Die Hard movie. Let's make it a Speed movie.
Oh, I guess those licensing fees for Die Hard are pretty expensive.
Yep. And then finally, in 2002, Minority Report, the script started as a sequel to Total Recall, which makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of elements, and you're like, yeah, those movies do kind of like seem like they're the same, so...
Are they both Philip K. Dick stories?
I don't know.
I think Total Recall is Stephen King. Nah, you know, because Stephen King is kind of the king of these things. I don't feel like he is, though. No, it is both Philip K. Dick. That makes perfect sense.
There you go. Look at that. There you go, indeed. So, I would think the surprising end to the first part of It. So, It Chapter 1 was pretty amazing. I did not expect it. I heard nothing about the sequel or the tentative release. It did not get spoiled for me. And in this day and age, I think that's really amazing that they didn't market it as It Chapter 1. They kept that hush-hush up until literally when the movie was over, which I think is one of the better coups in recent memories of the cinema. And I think they did a really good job with it. Congratulations, you made two really fun little films. That'll be fun to go back and watch on like Halloween or something like that in a couple years, right? So that might work its way into the regular rotation.
I completely agree. I think that this is actually one of the good Stephen King movies, so I guess I'd put it on the pedestal, like part one and part two.
Yeah.
Nice. Next to like The Shining or something. Maybe not, obviously not as good as The Shining. The Shining's like a fantastic masterpiece, but
yeah, but technically it's not really Stephen King on that at that one though. So
yeah, no, but it's a Stanley Kubrick movie. So yeah. If I call it a Stanley Kubrick movie, am I okay with this?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
I mean, it's a Stephen King story that was changed, right? So
that was adapted by Stanley Kubrick.
Yes, and I mean everyone knows that. I don't know why I'm splitting hairs at this point. So.
Well, it's because, like, to be honest, there's zero scary hedges.
Well, I think because
zero angry like garden hoses. Like, there's lots of very critical story things in the Shining book that Stanley Kubrick just glossed over. Like, where's my hedges, man?
Yeah, but I think the hedges? Fact that King came out and openly was like, I don't like Stanley Kubrick's movie. I think it's stupid. I'm like, well, all right.
Yeah, well, and then he hired on the one of the, like, a TV director to make his own.
Yep.
And it, hey, it's got hedges and a scary garden hose.
It's true.
Sorry, fire hose. I'm sorry. Fire hose, everybody.
Very true. Very, very true. Nice. Okay. So with that, we're done. We survived. We've got a scary, spooky game. I don't know if I'm going to get through it. I might have to play the original version on the PlayStation and not the new one because I'm a scaredy boy, you know?
Yeah, new one's too scary.
Too scary. Nice, nice. Okay, so with that, I think we kind of covered everything, right, for the most part?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Hopefully you're not being too spooked out, too scared. And, yeah, go from there. Cool, Tyson.
Get ready for those trick-or-treaters.
Oh, yeah. See nice. You. Talk to you later. Bye.
Snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel. Don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. Some distance makes everything seem small, and the fears that once controlled me can't get to me at all. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. Through the air into